Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Weiss and Nick here with you with a special Thanksgiving edition of NYG Weekly. We've been dropping a lot of content for you guys. If you haven't already, check out the interview with Dan Duggan. It's on Google, Apple, Spotify, everywhere. Anywhere you can find us, we're there. We'll talk Giants and Cowboys. Got a special guest, RJ Ochoa, blogging the boys. Had a great conversation with him. Kind of had a heated debate at the end with Eli Manning. But, you know, Cowboys guy, you know how he's going to feel. They don't know what it's like to win like we do. But, Nick, how are you, my friend? Happy early Thanksgiving to you. I know I'm probably not going to see your pretty face until Thanksgiving or after Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you as well, Weiss. It's fun doing this much content, but I wish we were talking about the team being good as opposed to like unpacking the misery. Because like the palace intrigue, the inside baseball stuff that we've been doing about like who's trying to knife who, who's looking out to protect who, who's trying to benefit from all of this. This stuff is fun to talk about. But at the end of the day, we're talking about a football team, and a football team's job is to win football games. And doing this eventually drives you insane. The, well, what if this, if that? We still have to go out there and play six more games. You know, Dan kept saying that when we talked to him the other day, they still have six more games. Things can get a whole lot worse.
Yeah. I mean, typically you would think, oh, you got six more games, you got a chance to turn this around. I actually think it can go the other way. But yeah, I was thinking about this morning too. Like, imagine if like the Giants were good and the Cowboys, regardless of where they were, like it'd be a big NFC East game, like Thanksgiving, Giants, Cowboys. Instead, it's, you know, an injured Tommy DeVito versus Cooper Rush, or maybe Drew Lock versus Cooper Rush. I don't know. Not a lot to enjoy, but I wanted just to do a quick chat of the game, kind of see what your expectations are, because mine are like, damn, can it somehow get worse from Sunday? And then you look at the injury report and like, no Jermaine Illuminor, Evan Neal, who's already not a good player, might have a hip injury. And then you got Micah Parsons, who's starting to get his feet under him, had a great game against the Cowboys. The Cowboy defense as a whole had a great game. They got Deron Bland back. Giants quarterback situation, they're the 32nd ranked scoring offense. Their defense looked like they had given up. You know, is Malik Nabers on the verge of like having one of those crazy wide receiver one outbursts? Like, what, how worse can this really get?
So they scored 7 points on Sunday against Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is fighting for their playoff lives. They are a decent team. They've had some bad luck. They've had some injuries. They've lost some close games. But they've been in pretty much all of their games. Tampa Bay is having a good season. The Cowboys are reeling. The Cowboys are 4-7. They're missing their franchise quarterback. They have one good wide receiver. Their starting tight end, Dalton Schultz, has been injured most of the season. Not Dalton Schultz, excuse me. I forget the buddy's
name. Jake Ferguson.
There we go. Yeah, there we go. He's been hurt. He's been out for a while. They don't have a good running back. Dowdle has been very inefficient. They have the corpse of Ezekiel Elliott. And the Giants point total, I just went and looked because I was curious. It's 16.5 on FanDuel. I think the Giants absolutely are going under 16.5. The question is, can they break double digits? Can they score 10 points against the Cowboys? Because like, I feel you said, how bad can it get? I feel like as long as they break 10 points, it's not a disgrace. Like, even if I don't think the Cowboys are putting up 40 points with Cooper Rush and the offense they have. But if the Cowboys win this game like 24-10, that's better than losing 30-7. Like, can they get to double digits? I think that's the barometer of how bad this can get. If they stay 9 points or less, I think that's a worse game. I think that's worse than last weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, 10 might be pushing. I'm just asking for a touchdown, really, for a touchdown. But yeah, I'm with you.
An offensive touchdown.
Yeah, but I think my biggest takeaway from going from Daniel Jones down to, you know, Drew Lock, Tommy DeVito, is we're not going to score a lot of points. But at least with Daniel, we always got that 15-play, 47-yard drive.
Touchdown. For a field goal.
Or a touchdown, yeah. That's even gone now. But, yeah, this is tough, man. I just keep thinking how bad it can get. And for the Cowboys, I think this is a scenario where if they start ripping off some wins, you know, if they beat the Giants, you look at their schedule. I mean, what are they, 4-7? I think they're 4-7, right?
Yeah,
4-7. They start ripping off some wins, you know.
like, look at their schedule after the Giants. They go, they host the Bengals at the Panthers. I mean, is it out of the realm of possibilities that they rip off two of the next three, or even three in a row, get to 500?
I don't think they'll beat Cincinnati. Cincinnati's kind of dead, but they still have
two of three, and they're sitting at what, 6-8?
Yeah, so
they have a chance to finish with like a respectable losing record.
Yeah. And if McCarthy can like convince Jerry Jones to keep him, if he doesn't lose out, you know, they're kind of in a similar boat, but that's a lame duck situation. I know Ethan had said this the other day. You think we get locked by halftime, or do you think DeVito
play because DeVito's hurt?
Yeah.
Which, by the way, it's so weird because Locke came out. I mean, DeVito was like, yeah, I don't know why I was limited. Everything hurts. Paraphrasing.
It's weird. The Giants have been very weird about injuries under Dable. I mean, we talked about that with Dan too, about just like unnecessarily being obtuse. Is 50-60% Tommy DeVito worse than Drew Locke? If so, they should be firing everyone. I mean, we've said that's the conspiracy theory I've seen floating around today, is that they don't want to play Drew Locke because that would make them look even worse if he plays.
That's my theory now. I feel like they're going to try to remember that SpongeBob sort of meme thing where that, I don't know who it is. I think it might be Patrick, who walks out with like his whole body wrapped and he's on crutches.
Yeah.
Have you seen that picture?
No. That's the dude who scams them to sell them the bags to sell.
You're right. Yes, it's that guy. Like, I just feel like that's going to be Tommy DeVito at AT&T Stadium on Thanksgiving. You put me in, coach. I'm ready. And the coach is like, all right. Yeah. Yeah, it's bad. I think it'll probably be Drew Locke, but my theory is they don't want to pay Drew Locke because that's really going to show how bad their quarterback evaluation is if they play Drew Locke.
I agree with you. The one last thing before we get out of here and throw it to our interview with RJ, what team is Daniel Jones signing with? Because all reports are saying that's going to happen tomorrow.
Baltimore or Minnesota.
Those seem like the two most likely. I think Minnesota probably makes more sense, but I could definitely see Baltimore as well.
Yeah. All right. Should we go to RJ?
Let's do it.
We now welcome in our guest. He is the manager and editor in chief of Blogging the Boys, the Dallas Cowboys blog. It's RJ Ochoa. RJ, how are you, my man?
I'm doing well. Happy Thanksgiving. Merry Christmas. Looking forward to the NFL draft, basically, is kind of how I feel these days.
I think you nailed it. I think both of us are also kind of looking forward, not looking forward to, but interested to see what happens on Black Monday, too. Both of our teams could be headed for some change. More so mine than yours, but who knows?
Yeah, I think there's probably more change coming to the Giants from a numerical perspective, but I think there's potentially, hopefully, more of a cultural change coming to the Cowboys. I mean, you know, we've been saying that for a long time. So either way, we're in the mud, but at least we're here together.
Yes, so let's talk about it. You talked about culture change and what needs to happen with the Cowboys. Obviously, everyone knows where the Cowboys are. You talk about change, and I think it has to start with Jerry Jones. And I think the last time I had you on, we sort of discussed this a little bit about Jerry and his influence and how it's negatively impacting the Cowboys. But this is really bad. And just looking at it from the outside in, take away, you know, the fact that I don't like the Cowboys. But I always thought that Jerry adds a layer of pressure to the Cowboys, a very unnecessary pressure, whether it's on the coaching staff, the quarterback, the star players, whatever. Anything from a big game on Thanksgiving or during the week or during the offseason when he sort of negotiates through the media or makes these kind of comments, it just makes things awkward. If you talk about culture change, right? And I think you said it starts at the top. Obviously, at the top of the table is Jerry Jones. Talk to me about that culture change that needs to happen in Dallas.
Yeah, I mean, there's a quote that I had forgotten about that I was reminded of recently, thanks to the great Bob Sturm from The Ticket in Dallas, and has an incredible Substack. And I'm sure you remember now 11 years ago when the Cowboys lost the third of three straight what were de facto NFC East title games. They lost the first one to the Giants and then Washington and then Philadelphia. Tony Romo didn't play in that third one. It was Kyle Orton, but they still lost. And after that game, that was still in the relatively new days of what was Cowboys Stadium at the time, but ultimately became AT&T Stadium. Jerry Jones was asked, I mean, this is a really embarrassing thing, right? Like, you've lost the third straight NFC East title game, one to each division rival, a little bit before memes became super popular. But He was asked, like, you know, are you disappointed? Are you embarrassed? Like, do you feel bad about this? And he literally said, you can look this up. He said, look around. This was obviously in the home building. He said, could you be embarrassed in a stadium like this? And that's the culture. I mean, it really is. And I mean, we could spend forever talking about any one element of it. We could talk about the all-in line that was unnecessary, that gaslit everybody, that stirred the pot, the delaying of extensions for Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb, the continued delay of an extension for Micah Parsons, the fact that they didn't extend Mike McCarthy or didn't fire him outright and sent him into a lame duck year, and then only really seriously entertained Rex Ryan and Ron Rivera besides their old friend Mike Zimmer, who they also signed a one-year deal, that they didn't entertain any serious running backs. I know that's a conversation on your end as well. And that they brought back Zeke in the most memeable possible way. And that all of these things predictably blew up in their face, and that they then, you know, cried wolf and pointed fingers at everybody else, including local radio hosts or local reporters by way of Trayvon Diggs. It is a broken sort of thing, but all that does feel just a little bit in the rearview mirror coming off of a win. That's the magic of sports, obviously, that one win can make you forget about that for just a little bit.
Does it feel like this is a culmination of years of bad mistakes, or is this kind of a Murphy's Law type deal? Because I go back and forth when I look at the Cowboys on the outside looking in.
I do think there's some Murphy's Law, and I'm not a curse believer or anything like that. You know, for a long time, people thought that that Jerry was cursed after firing Jimmy Johnson and whatnot. In case you are unaware, they haven't won a game since December 30th of last year, a home game, that is. That was the night they put Jimmy in the Ring of Honor. So it's almost as if, you know, the universe said, okay, you think you've righted this wrong? Like, you think you took the idol off of the sacred spot, Indiana Jones, and put the sandbag back? Like, watch, we're really going to send you through something here. But I think it's just poor decision-making. And I know you all follow the Cowboys, you know, very closely because they're a division rival and whatnot. But I do think there is something to not following them on a day-to-day basis, that there is some level of national catch-up happening. I think people look at this past offseason, and I think even your averagely passionate NFL fan realized, wow, the Cowboys aren't doing anything. Like, they're really just actually doing nothing. That is very normal for them. I mean, that wasn't a one-off. The last big time free agent who they took a swing at was Brandon Carr in 2012. And because he didn't turn into prime Deion Sanders, they felt like that was a mistake, even though he was a really serviceable player for them. So they love to bargain bin shop, and they love to, you know, people love to say, even the fans who still buy this stuff, like, oh, well, they love to build through the draft. You know why they like to build through the draft? Because they can't avoid it. Like, they have to make the picks, like, when they're on the clock. That's why they love the draft. And it is cheap labor and all those sorts of things. So I think it's just people now seeing the forest through the trees a little bit relative to this. I think it's been this long. And I think that, have either of you seen the third Mighty Ducks movie? I
know that's
okay. Yeah. For anyone who hasn't, it's the TLDR is the Ducks have achieved all this success at this point in the film franchise. And they go to this like prep high school, and they're kind of running up against the varsity squad that's been playing their way. And they schedule a match against them to prove that they're the better team. And they have a new coach, and they hate him because he's not the old coach. And they schedule this matchup without the coach's knowledge, and they show up and they just get destroyed. And they try their signature flying V move, obviously, and it just gets completely steamrolled. And the coach shows up and is like, what the hell are you doing? Scrimmaging against these guys, they're crushing you. And he says something that I think about all the time. He says, your little duck tricks won't work here anymore. And that's kind of how the Cowboys are. Like, Jerry Jones on some level thinks, like, I can hop on the local radio and in glitz and glamour my way, I can be charming and I could smoke and mirrors and say, you know, circumcise a mosquito or whatever ism that I want, and everybody will eat it up. And everybody's just kind of sick of it at this point, and people aren't buying it anymore, which is just kind of the state of the moment.
Yeah, you brought up a good point about the whole the personnel and building through the draft. You know, in the past, I would always look at the Cowboys and I would say, I don't think it's personnel. I think they have a lot of talent. And, you know, the whole build through the draft, I mean, they've drafted well. You know, I don't like to look at, you know, judge a draft class until like year three, but you look at the players from 2022, Tyler Smith, you know, Sam Williams, you know, good player, off the field stuff, injuries, you know, Jake Ferguson's a good tight end. Deron Bland, you know, had, I think it was all pro last year or pro bowl player last year in the fifth round. That's great value. And obviously talk about the Micah Parsons pick and, you know, Odigazua that year too, if I remember, and then the CeeDee Lamb, Trayvon Diggs. My point is they drafted well, they have talent. This year in particular, do you look at it as, I look at it as a personnel issue. forget about the all income. And I just don't think the Cowboys, this is a good Cowboys roster, right? Now, a lot of it could be that some of the draft picks have also not developed well enough. Injuries, obviously, with Dak, but even when Dak was healthy, they weren't particularly playing well. Is it personnel this year or is it coaching? Because even if, when even if Jerry being Jerry and them being the way they are and cheap, they still were in the playoffs, you know, winning playoff in the playoffs, winning a potential playoff game. Whereas this year, it's like it's bottomed out.
Yeah. So this is, you know, there's a lot to that. First of all, you know, people act like their success in the playoffs or whatever is meaningless. And people say like, so what, you lose every year, when, you know, their last 3 years, the teams they've lost to, they've lost to two teams in the playoffs, the San Francisco 49ers, who we all agree is a juggernaut, and the Green Bay Packers, who, you know, after that game, we all said, okay, this is the new dude in Jordan Love. And we don't, you know, if, on the other hand, the Cowboys did beat the Tom Brady Buccaneers, the sub 500 Buccaneers, admittedly. And nobody gives them any credit for that, right? But we give the 49ers the full credit for beating the Cowboys, who we say suck, right? Like it's a weird juxtaposition in that sense. So I think that this is a culmination of a lot of factors. I don't think they have the horses, which is to your personnel point. I think that, and I think that that was a self-induced situation. They let a lot of talent walk out the door, and that isn't even necessarily a bad move as long as you restock the shelves, as long as you resupplement, but they didn't. They let Tyron Smith go. They let Tony Pollard go. They let Dorrance Armstrong go. And they thought that, you know, nine draft picks was going to be enough to just make everything work. And that's where they're victims of their own success. You talked about Deron Bland. He's a fifth round pick. Oh man, we could totally find a fifth round draft pick to be an all pro corner. It doesn't totally work that way. You know, I mean, you stumble into these things, but you shouldn't bank on them. And that's the problem, is they banked on, you know, acing every single part of the exam. And that's just never going to happen in the NFL. It's a battle of attrition. So I think on top of that, on top of not having the horses, the coaching has clearly regressed. And it's really, you know, sad to see. And losing Dan Quinn was obviously going to hurt on some level, no matter what was going to happen. And then on top of that, you've just got the perpetual dread of Jerry jumping on the radio or in front of a TV camera and just adding to the point. And then you've got, I mean, I've never asked a player this, but I feel like it has to, at least the players who have been around for a longer time. Maybe this isn't the case for some of the greener players, but they live in a very large shadow. I mean, it is and it's ironic because their stadium needs one more than anything else. But right. I mean, they are fighting, you know, history in just every single thing that they do. And maybe one day Frodo will come along and deliver the ring to Mordor. But so far, you know, Tony Romo wasn't him, and Dak Prescott, I know a lot of people don't believe is him. I mean, it is just, it does feel like they can't help but, you know, make this thing the most embarrassing sort of situation possible, which I'm assuming is a point you empathize with.
Would you say that they're too smart for their own good in that respect? Because you mentioned letting guys walk and thinking they can draft out their solutions, and the way they haggle over every last dollar and all of these negotiations, because it feels like more Jerry trying to prove a point than actually anything else. Because like, they had the cap space to take care of these guys. I don't necessarily understand why it was such a prolonged and painful situation.
Yeah, I think there's some Sinatra style to this, right? Like it has to be Jerry's way. But ultimately, I think, you know, you guys, and I appreciate that you said the all-in thing doesn't matter. But that was so annoying because it led to these like exposés of people trying to, well, what do you really mean? Here's what I really think all-in meant. I mean, if you're curious for my two cents, I think all in was a thing he said because he felt like saying it in that moment. And it didn't matter if it had consequences. It didn't matter if he contradicted himself a day later, a month later, 5 minutes later, because if you listen to any Jerry Jones interview, he'll contradict himself all the time. I mean, we just sat here for a little while and talked about how they prioritized the draft on Tuesday of this week. In talking about not tanking, Jerry Jones said, well, you know, you don't want to tank because draft picks are an ambiguous sort of thing. Well, 9 months ago, bro, you guys were just completely and totally banking on your draft picks working out. So again, I think that I have fought the good fight, I think, in saying, no, they care about more than making money, and they care about being competitive. But it's really difficult to come to any conclusion than that that's their bottom line. And if you believe that to be their bottom line, then why would they change? Why would they work harder and get up earlier and stress themselves even more, when what they're doing is working? Again, if you believe that to be the ultimate goal. So I think that they are just lazy, and I think that they don't really approach this thing the same way. I'm assuming you both, in a, you know, objective way, admire somebody like Howie Roseman. They will never, ever be that. They will never be looking for the cutting edge on something. They will never be forward thinking. They will always be reactionary. And to use the DAC example, I mean, CD is a slightly different case, but you can argue that they're, and I was a proponent for, you know, signing Dak, extending Dak, and maintain that he's a top tier franchise quarterback. But you can argue that there should have been a point of demarcation, a point of no return. Pick a day, May 10th, that they should have said to themselves, okay, if we don't get it done by, it's May 11th now, we didn't get a deal done, we live with this, we accept this. And it may blow up in our face, it may not work out, Dak may go win 5 Super Bowls somewhere else, but we've made this Giants decision. Yeah, but the fact that they signed him on the day the season began, I mean, like an hour and a half before their, actually it was like 3 hours before their season started. I mean, it was quite literally done in literally the most inefficient way possible. And that's the problem with them. I mean, they just do not, you can make the case that they should have extended Dak and CeeDee prior to the 2023 offseason beginning, before Jalen Hurts got his bag, and they did not do that. And in the process, and if you think about it, that was coming off of Dak's interception year in 2022. You think about the bargain that you could have gotten, not just relative to the market, but relative to how he played. And the amazing thing is they're in the middle of it again with Micah. I mean, people scoff at the idea of trading Micah Parsons, and I don't think I would sign up for that. But you have already now made this more inefficient by not getting it done at the earliest possible point. So they just are stuck in this perpetual nightmare.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if you know this, but there was a large sector of Giant fans, myself included, by the way, that were completely open to the idea. Because we knew about Dak's contract and no franchise tag last year. If you don't get a deal, he's going to hit the market. Like, we were very much, like, there were jersey swaps, you know, many options. I think I even saw Dak in those hideous 100th anniversary uniforms too. I mean, we were all in on Dak, you know, for the summer. We were like, hey, this is a realistic possibility. So I wanted to ask you about Dak. I mean, there is a lot of weird stuff coming out of Dallas. Maybe it's just, you know, these narratives that get created on social media, but like, is this Deion Shador package to Dallas? Is that, first of all, is it even possible? Too, is there any merit to it?
I don't think there's merit to it. I don't think it's pragmatic in reality, right? I mean, in a you know, world of infinite possibilities, you can always figure a way out. But in a practical sense, Dak Prescott is the starting quarterback, you know, for this team for the next 3 years, regardless of what you, I, or, you know, at Romo Fan 2014 wants to tweet at me on Twitter, you know, every single day.
I have to find
day.
That account now.
There are some pseudonyms I would offer that maintained, you know, that had the Cowboys returned to Romo in 2016, they would have won the Super Bowl, and that they aired and they costed him. I mean, there's a bit of a Mandela effect that happens when it comes to Romo. And look, I'm a big Tony Romo fan, but like we're all adults here. Like, we can all, you know, call a spade a spade. But anyway, so you know, again, if you live in the reality of the NFL. Just play, even if you could, even if you did finish high enough to draft Shador, wherever you think he's going to go, you're just going to burn the first 3 years of his rookie quarterback contract. I mean, it just is insane. And again, in a pragmatic, practical sense, I would assume that he's only going to go somewhere where his father could coach. And I mean, that's a whole different kind of conversation. And yeah, the Cowboys will probably be looking for a head coach. But if you believe that Deion does want to go to the NFL, there's no way the Cowboys can draft Shador. So does Deion want to go coach a NFL team that doesn't feature his son on it? I mean, you know, it isn't a real thing, but it is something that is obviously catnip and low hanging fruit that, you know, the national storylines are going to kind of cling to right now.
Speaking of coaches, I'm not going to ask specifically candidates or anything, but what in your mind is the gap in coaching that needs to be fulfilled? I assume McCarthy isn't coming back, even though Jerry said it's not out of the realm of possibility. What type of coach, and not necessarily just like offense or defense, what leadership, what coaching wise do you feel this team needs?
You know, right before I joined you, I quote tweeted somebody, which I always feel like kind of narcissistic doing. Like, I feel like I'm trying to show the world that I think my point is better than yours. And that isn't exactly where I was coming from. But I had tweeted earlier on Tuesday that I thought Mike McCarthy was the most successful Cowboys coach throughout the drought. So if you begin in 1996, and I don't know that that's a particularly close race, although some people are wondering whether the Jason Garrett era was more successful, which I would, you know, really push back on. And somebody said, no, Bill Parcells was so much better. He took the team to the playoffs with Quincy Carter. And I can't agree with that. I mean, did the Cowboys win the Super Bowl with Mike McCarthy? No. Am I acting like it was this overwhelming success? Absolutely not. But they achieved so many things that they didn't throughout the drought because of him. And Mike McCarthy, a long time ago, lost a very public PR battle to Aaron Rodgers, and that warped a lot of people's perception of him in a way that he will probably, unfortunately, never overcome. But I maintain that he was a very good coach and a very good offensive play caller. I mean, I know that this season has sort of counteracted this, but if you recall, prior to last season, Mike McCarthy said, I want to move on from Kellen Moore, who had had a lot of success, who had overseen arguably the best offense in the NFL. I know in the regular season and all the jokes and whatnot. He said, I want to move on, and I think that I can do a better job. And Kellen went to Los Angeles and was horrible, and we act like that didn't exist now, that the Eagles are flying high and whatnot. And Mike McCarthy was right. I mean, like, he was absolutely right. He was 100% correct. Dak Prescott finished second in MVP voting last year. CeeDee Lamb had a career year. They each turned those into record-setting, franchise-setting, record-whatever contract extensions with the team. He was completely and totally right. If Sean McVay did the exact same thing, people would be bowing down to him, acting like he was this god for completely and totally calling his shot and landing it. And again, you have to count the season as well. So I'm not acting like Mike McCarthy is pure and, you know, innocent and just some sort of victim, because he has not done a great job this year, and he has made matters worse in a lot of different ways. But I think he's the archetype. I mean, I think you want a dude with skins on the wall who has been there and done that. And for a little while, he was pushing back against Jerry. For a little while, he did swing the weight of the ring around and who he was and how he'd been in a way that Bill Parcells obviously did. That's, you know, what sort of started this thought process for me. You just need that guy. I love Ben Johnson, and I would probably, you know, punch each of you in the face in a chance to have, you know, him be the head coach of the Cowboys. But is green Ben Johnson, who's never been a head coach in the NFL before, going to win any battle against Jerry Jones? No. Is Bill Belichick? Maybe. And I don't even know how I feel about Bill Belichick. I'm certainly not unwilling to explore anything at this point in time, but you need the guy who's been there and done that, and you have that guy. And that's not an advocation for Mike McCarthy to return. It's just a frustration that the Cowboys continue to shoot themselves in the foot.
Yeah, the Belichick thing is an interesting thing hovering over Dallas and New York. I think the big question is would, from the Giants' perspective, is will a guy that's, what, 75 years old, looking to break the coaching record, want to come to a team that has no quarterback and likely going to be rebuilding? I don't think so. Would he want to go to Dallas, where it's clearly not going to be his, you know, he's in full control? Obviously, there's the Jones family and Jerry and Steven, and then, you know, the front office, how it's structured. Like, will Belichick be okay with that, living in the shadow, like you say, of Jerry Jones? So I don't know. You brought up a lot of good points with the Cowboys, and I you've sold me a lot. I had you on, if you remember, 2022. It was the Cowboys Giants. I think it was a Monday night game. Cooper Rush, ironically, was starting that game too. And I asked you this question, and I want to pivot a little bit to get your thoughts on the Giants. And I asked you about the coaching advantage and who do you think has it. And you were adamant that McCarthy does. So I don't know if you were ahead of the curve with Brian Daboll, or maybe you're just being a homer with your Cowboys. I don't know. But I wanted to ask you about the Giants. There's a lot of negativity around them. My mindset for this whole thing is that it just seems like even the right decision that this regime made ended up blowing up right in their face, like not paying a running back that you haven't had success with. What are your thoughts on the Giants as they seem to be headed toward another, I don't know, rebuild, cleaning house, whatever?
Yeah, so I think we're all around the same age, and I say that to say, like, growing up in my formative years in high school and whatnot, I feared the Giants, like, more than anybody else. And it was always just this, you know, terrifying day. I mean, you know, you got to go to, you know, the Meadowlands, and, you know, it's going to be cold, and Eli's going to find a way. I mean, you know, I have a high regard for the Giants, not in a, like, they're super classy and the mayors are wonderful people way, but just right. in a reality way. I think, and there's a lot to this, and I know you both have covered it a lot, obviously. I think that it's super unfortunate that they can't make a move without just, like, stepping on a landmine, because you're right. I mean, people still are actively like, can you believe how stupid this team was to pay a quarterback over a running back? Like, that made sense. It really did make sense. It's very unfortunate that the year of success was 2022 specifically, but I mean, they were stuck. I said this at the time, I said it on podcasts and videos and wrote about it. They were right in my mind to pay Daniel Jones. They didn't give him a market setting deal. It was, and people act like, oh, he was making $40 million of money or $40 million a year. That's a lot of money. It, like, to us, I fully agree with you on that. But, like, in this world, it's pennies. Like in this world, they got an insane bargain for their franchise quarterback, and they did not pay the running back for every year over the last decade and a half. Up until this moment, we have all universally agreed that running backs do not matter. Saquon is taking off, and that is super unfortunate and a very, very unfortunate coincidence. Derrick Henry's taking off, which is adding to the collective point. Obviously, Joe Mixon's having success, not a free agency addition, but like this, there's this resurgence of running backs are
Josh
important.
Jacobs. Josh Jacobs.
Aaron Jones, even in Minnesota, like Tony Pollard in Tennessee. Like it's just, you know, it's a really unfortunate thing that happened. Joe Shane's son happened to say that Jayden Daniels was awesome, as if nobody else on earth thought this. And the guy gets memed into oblivion for this as well. So I feel really bad for Joe Shane and Brian Daboll on a human level, because I think that there's not a cultural issue with the Giants, but I mean, it's just like, how could it's easy content to make fun of them right now. I've laughed at them. I don't think I've personally shared the John Mara photo, but like, I get why people do it. I think they just, I know this is frustrating. I think you have to be patient. I really do. I think you have to ride this out, you know, another year and give them a shot to try this one more time without Daniel Jones, without Saquon Barkley, a completely blank canvas. Because I don't know that I think that Brian Daboll sucks. I don't know that I think Joe Shane sucks. I think that they're both qualified, but I think if you're going to clean house, you got to get rid of them both, because they obviously are a package deal. They have a history together. You can't say, okay, Daboll, you're out, Joe Shane, you're here. Because then it's just really awkward for whoever's not Brian Daboll and whoever's in the building. And then it's awkward for the new GM that isn't Joe Shane that has to join that head coach. So it's got to be all or nothing. Although that was a different series, obviously, that the Giants weren't on. And being on one in general is, I think, why this whole situation is what it is.
But don't you think if you commit to them, obviously they're going to be picking a quarterback. Isn't this a multi-year commitment? And that's the question, right? It's like, what have they done in the first 3 years? The drafts haven't been good. Obviously the quarterback situation. What have they done in 3 years that makes you confident that they can go draft a franchise quarterback? I mean, if they do draft it, like, what are they going to show in the first year?
So I can't answer that question. But what I can say is they swung for Brian Burns. Like these are creative minds and creative people who are willing to, you know, do some ambitious things that certainly my team isn't willing to do. I mean, but beyond that, they had the stones to let Saquon walk. And I know that like bragging about that right now sounds really stupid and really foolish, but I mean, and they stood up to them, or to John Mara, for that. I mean, they stood up even when he was saying like, oh, well, this is a fan favorite. Who cares, John, if he's a fan favorite? Like, that's the dumbest reason to cling to anybody ever. They also, I mean, and some of this was just the circumstance of it all, got Daniel Jones to not only be benched, but to be released by the team. I mean, they have done the crawling through the tunnel that Andy Dufresne did. And so on some level, it just wouldn't be right to let them get to the other side and get bathed and washed in the rain of it all. But I mean, they have navigated those things, which nobody else before them did. I don't know how either of you feel about this. Maybe, you know, history has allowed you to be revisionist about it. But I always thought that Ben McAdoo getting grief for benching Eli Manning was the dumbest thing of all time. I mean, he was the only person who was mature enough, or, you know, not blinded enough to say this dude stinks. And he wanted to play Geno Smith, who is still actively a legitimate quarterback in the NFL right now. So I do think that if there's one organization in the NFL that is too emotionally tied to things, it is probably the New York Giants, and emotionally tied in a well-intentioned way. But just that blinds them from making the objectively sound decision that I think Joe Shane and Brian Daboll have helped sort of push to the threshold.
The Giants, you make a good point. I'll let you go, Nick. The Giants have a unique ability of always reacting to the reaction.
I think that if you're a conspiracy theorist, the like Tommy DeVito forearm injury thing or whatever is an example of that, right? Like, oh no, you all think he sucks now. We tried to play him because we thought you'd do the cutlet stuff and whatever. And the whole world's going to be watching on Thanksgiving. So Drew Lock it is, or whatever. To be very clear, I would swap places in an instant. If we could go back to 2011, I would 100% take a Super Bowl in 13 other 12 other years in the wilderness. I would absolutely do that over, you know, Jason Garrett and Mike McCarthy. But it's like winning the Super Bowl in the worst possible way, because, and that sounds really stupid, but it blinded and it misled the organization to think that they were doing things that they weren't. It's okay to say that you lucked into two Super Bowls. It doesn't take the trophies away. It doesn't make you less of a good team. It's okay to say we really luckily in a fluky way won these two titles. We got the rings, we got the trophies, but let's learn from this. There's a very, my good friend, Brandon Lee Gatton, who covers the Eagles. He's the me at SB Nation for our Eagles site. He has a term that I really like. That's a moral loss. We all know what a moral win is when you lose a game, but you say like, we took some lessons away from this that we can build upon. Sometimes you win a game that you're not supposed to, and you should take away the lessons of a loss. You know what I mean? And in a weird way, I think the Giants should have said to themselves circa 2012 or whatever, like, okay, we won two Super Bowls. This is great, but we're not necessarily doing this the right way. And we can change our line of thinking a little bit here so that next time in the future, it doesn't have to be a moral loss. It can just be an outright win.
It's very funny you bring that up, because a few weeks ago, there was quite a bit of conjecture amongst Giants fans about how things haven't been the same since Tom Coughlin got fired. And that was 9 years ago, coming off of 2-6-10 in a row seasons, where the in-house replacement, Ben McAdoo, was vouched for by the franchise quarterback, Eli Manning, and everyone was in agreement that Tom Coughlin was 68 years old and needed the organization needed to get younger and overhauled. And people still, 9 years later, are hung up on the fact that they fired a coach who won two Super Bowls 3 years after the last time they won a Super Bowl. And something you mentioned about the wilderness, Weiss, Ethan, and I have been talking about this for a few weeks of, How long are you willing to trade off to eventually get out of that wilderness? And we've been talking about it in the quarterback position, because Weiss keeps saying, I just want to get lucky on the quarterback once. Give me 4 or 5 years with stability. Give me that medium term quarterback. The Cowboys have kind of done that. And, you know, Dak wasn't the plan. But how would you diagnose it, explain it to us who are kind of in the wilderness? After having the franchise guy for so long, you know, you had Eli for 14 years, you won two Super Bowls. Do you think it's reasonable to be at this point, you know, 5 years removed from Eli and starting to be antsy about not having the quarterback?
I have a good friend who's a Denver Broncos fan. And in 2016, which was the year they were repeating as Super Bowl champions, when they were going to clearly miss the playoffs, and they've obviously been in the wilderness themselves. You know, we were arguing in a friendly way in December of that year. And I was like, dude, you have no right. I was like, you just won the Super Bowl. And he went on this like diatribe of like, no, I expect us to compete every year. And I was like, you have no idea. Like, talk to me when you have like crawled through the tunnel the way I have. So I'd say the Broncos are probably there, which would mean the Giants are there. Like, you get a decade, you get a decade of leniency. And, the moment, like the t-shirt we bought to celebrate the title starts to fade a little bit, like the peeling starts to come off or whatever, that's when it's time for us to start, you know, raising our standards a little bit more. So I would say the Giants are there, and that's what makes the whole thing frustrating. I mean, we mocked the Packers for this, right? Like, oh, you only won two Super Bowls between Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers over like whatever it was, 30 years. And the Cowboys are that. Like, the Cowboys are the Colts from Peyton Manning to Andrew Luck. And I'm not saying that the players are the same, equally as good, but Tony Romo took over as the full-time starter for the Dallas Cowboys at halftime of a Monday Night Football game against the New York Giants in 2006. We're talking almost 20 years. 20 years of outside of a couple of times when there was a broken collarbone or a shattered ankle, right? Like, those things, that's just a battle of attrition that the NFL is. You're talking about almost 20 years of viable, sustainable franchise quarterback play. And I know that this probably upsets you or makes you feel like, man, you guys are on easy street. You didn't even have to burn a day two pick on. I mean, Tony Romo was an undrafted free agent and Dak Prescott a fourth round pick. So like, how do you have nothing to show for this? I think about, do either of you remember the YouTube video of the Cleveland Browns fan, the Factor of Sadness video, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So yes. For anyone who doesn't know, this Browns fan is really upset because they have sucked. This is, I think 2007 is the year that it's taking place. And I think that day there was this like crazy Philip Rivers, Aaron Rodgers, maybe even Brett Favre game at Lambeau Field between the Chargers and Packers, where they scored like 93 points between them. And so he's just going off on the Brown Stadium saying like, you suck. Look at that game. They scored a million points. So you're not even playing the same sport. But he has a line that I also think about a lot. He says, do you realize that it is actually statistically harder to be this consistently bad than it would be for you to sometimes accidentally, occasionally be good? And I think about like the number of teams that have like Cowboys fans are down so bad that we'll settle. Like last year was like, okay, you know, we'll lose the NFC championship. Like we'll get there and the Niners will house us, but like we'll get there, you know, and it will be a win. Think about how pathetic that is. Like truly think about how sad that is. And we were fine with it. We were rooting for it. That's how broken we are. And so it is insane I mean, the last time they appeared in an NFC championship game, I talked about the Broncos to start this answer. John Elway did not have a Super Bowl ring of any kind. He has now two as a player and retired, was enshrined to the Hall of Fame, started a whole different career, and built his own Super Bowl winning team that I just referenced that included a player who was lost in the wilderness of the Dallas Cowboys in DeMarcus Ware.
You know, I don't know if you are trying to get sympathy from us, but I just want to put something in perspective for you, because the two Super Bowls and whatnot.
It's not just the fact that, you know, the Daniel Jones thing and going from Eli to Daniel and these losing seasons after losing season and firing head coaches. It's that we've come very close to getting out of that. I'll give you some examples. Ben McAdoo on record, loving Patrick Mahomes, going to his pro day. Again, revisionist history, but at the time, Patrick Mahomes wasn't this generational prospect coming out. That people thought that he might not even go in the first round. Ben McAdoo loved him. Dave Gettleman, who's touted as probably the worst general manager or one of the worst GMs in NFL history. No direction, no nothing. Loved Justin Herbert. The only time he got out of his basement was when he went to go watch Justin Herbert, I think against Utah. Justin Herbert goes back to school. Dave Gettleman drafts Daniel Jones a year later. Dave Gettleman's still in position to draft Justin Herbert, who goes sixth overall, but he takes Andrew Thomas, number four overall, instead of doing what the Arizona Cardinals did with Josh Rosen and Kyler Murray. Last year, we're so bad. I think we were 2-8. We're thinking, okay, this is a great draft class. We're in position. This is the plan. You gave Daniel Jones a shot. You paid him, yeah, but now you have a chance to replace him. Unfortunately, towards ACL, but it is what it is. And then we rip off three straight wins with Tommy DeVito, and we're picking sixth. And then in a quarterback, in a draft where quarterbacks go 1, 2, and 3, and neither of those three teams even entertain trading up. Everyone talks about Saquon and that thing, but Joe Shane was practically begging New England to kind of, hey, let's negotiate. And they didn't do it. So I get it. You know, the Cowboys, the drought, whatever, the standard. But we have been so, like, just demoralized as a fan base, where there's literally nothing. Let me tell you something. A lot of Giant fans, myself included, we're living with the fact that, like, we believe that no matter what happens at the end of the year, keep them, fire them, it's going to be the wrong decision. No matter who they hire or what they do, it's not going to work. That's where we are. You guys are just asking for Jerry Jones to get out of the way. That's it. And I don't think that's a lot to ask for. Well, it might be, but it's not.
It's an impossible thing to ask for. Like, oh, I wish Darth Vader would hand over the Sith. You know what I mean? Like, that's like what you're saying. I mean, it's a much easier said than done sort of thing. They both feel hopeless and they both feel endless. I don't know who I'd rather be at this point in time. I suppose I guess I'd rather be the team that's won 7 games in a row against the other. Yes. But
you have the quarterback. If nothing else, I would rather be you because you have Dak. That alone gives you the argument.
Yeah, I mean, and the whole thing to me, I mean, look, Dak has had an extraordinary amount of success against the Giants and against the, you know, Washington franchise and even against the Eagles, despite the fact that, you know, none of their fans are objective enough to admit that and have to cope in their own ways. Record,
Dak's a better quarterback than Jalen Hurts.
I appreciate you both and love you very much. And so we can agree that just for this moment that the Giants are really dysfunctional, have been really dysfunctional since, call it what you want, 2016, 2012, like pick your point, right? Like either way, it's a very long time. So kind of back to my point, an entire third of your division, two thirds, if you count Washington, because you certainly can, have been more than dysfunctional for almost a decade. What do you have to show for it? Like, you know, we say we love as a football fandom to be like, well, yeah, Tom Brady got to play in the AFCs. I mean, it's a pity that like the Cowboys and Eagles, who have been the adults at the table, so to speak, have a single Super Bowl appearance or two, I guess two, since 2017 between the two of them in this division. Like you would think that it would be more. You would think that the NFC East winner would just kind of topple over people the way that the Chiefs do and Patrick Mahomes does. So I get that you've been close. I would offer the same thing that you've probably told people a million times, that, you know, Saquon wouldn't be having the same success with the Giants this year as he is in Philly. You have no idea what Mahomes or Herbert or Drake May or whoever would be doing. And that's why an argument that an overall reset is needed is what makes the most sense. But it's also a world where you can get lucky. I mean, you can, if you think about the way that Dak Prescott entered the fold, it was the dumbest possible thing of all time. Tony Romo had missed 12 games the year prior, 12 games, and they held the fourth overall pick. And they took a running back. I mean, like, think about how dumb that is. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's incredibly stupid.
It's not as dumb as taking him number 2 overall.
That's true.
I forgot to enter that. And enter that into my whole little rant.
Sure.
They had the number two pick and they didn't take a quarterback.
And the only reason that you know, so before Tony Romo was injured in the preseason in 2016, in case either of you forgot, Kellen Moore shattered his ankle himself. And that vaulted Dak Prescott from QB. Actually, Dak was QB4. Jameel Showers, who would ultimately convert to safety, was QB3 at the time. And Dak became QB3 and then QB2 when Kellen got hurt. And then Tony Romo gets hurt and the rest is history. Although he did lose his first game to the Giants. Lost both of his first two games against the Giants, actually. Yeah,
I'll never forget those games.
Yeah, I mean, neither. I mean, you know, it all worked out the same way. But I mean, it's just, it feels like, I guess where if we are competing for like who has it worse. And I thought about this after the World Series, and I don't mean to be insensitive. If you are Yankees fans or your audience are Yankees fans, but the Cowboys obviously get compared a lot to the Yankees or the Dodgers or the Lakers or like pick Manchester United, like pick your, you know, worldwide team. Like the Yankees have an incredible drought. And again, I'm not pressing. I am a Houston Astros fan for what it's worth, but their drought, the Yankees drought, which is now 15 years old, like was born when the Cowboys drought was 14 years old. Like, think about that. Like the Lakers, even if you disregard the 2020 title, like Mickey Mouse, COVID bubble, whatever, their last real title was what, 14 years ago, which was when the Cowboys drought was 15 years old. The Dodgers, again, we can talk about the COVID title, 2020, all that stuff. Now they have a real one, right? Like, there's no team, the only one, and I am sorry for the stray, that you can put in this camp is the New York Knicks. They're the only team that has a very similar, like you're a worldwide brand and you just have nothing to show for it. If you're a Cowboys fan under 40, you have nothing. Like all you have lived your life is your friends or your family, you know, your whoever is just making fun of you and sending you the same text every year, like, oh, I was going to lose, blah, blah. And you don't have the one. If you're a Dodgers fan right now, you're like, it was totally worth it. It was absolutely worth it. I made it. I'm here. You can all middle fingers all the way. But you don't have that if you're a Cowboys fan. It's hard to feel like you're ever going to have.
I have a stupid question for you, being that we're playing on Thanksgiving this week. How do you feel about the Cowboys being on Thanksgiving every year? Would you like to be able to separate the two things so you could actually enjoy your holiday? Or is it so ingrained at you at this point, you're kind of used to it?
Yeah, I mean, like as a kid, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, my family, you know, is obviously what I do for a living, you know, is full of football fans. And that's part of why I do this now and have the passions that I do. And so like growing up, we'd go to my aunt's house every year, and my aunt Linda, you know, she's so awesome. And it was always, you know, you better have this ready, you know, by like 12:30, because we have to eat and like allow time for, you know, everything to chill before, you know, we kind of, you know, get ready or whatever. And now, you know, it's part of the day. And it sucks, honestly, more when the Cowboys play on Christmas Eve or Christmas, because, you know, you're not going to have that other holiday to kind of soften the blow or whatever. Especially now as a husband and as a father, like, you know, there's all these sorts of, you know, complications that come with that. And I will add, my son just turned 3 years old. He was initially born on the night before Thanksgiving in 2021. So it's just like,
oh, my daughter was born in July.
Well, yeah, it's like, of course, dude, you know, you would just enter like our lives, our family, like our family dynamic. And so, you know, his first birthday was actually the last Cowboys Giants Thanksgiving Day game in 2022. So that was like this crazy day for me. Like I'm balancing covering the game and working the game, and he's turning one, and I got all this stuff, and we're doing cake, and his hands are dirty, and my computer's right there. Last year was Black Friday, but this year it was this past Sunday, which worked out nicely. So it's just life. I mean, you do kind of get used to it. It is a little bit of a Super Bowl feel in terms of presentation. It's cool. I mean, it's cool to have that all to yourself and to know that it bothers everybody, obviously, as well.
One question I want to ask you, I remember when we did this in 2000, a couple of years back, someone messaged me, was like, I can't believe you didn't ask this question. What is your worst memory when it comes to the Cowboys and Giants rivalry?
I think the easy answer is obviously the 07 divisional round. And
yes, that was my favorite moment ever.
Yeah, I think that's the easy answer. That was my senior year of high school. I told my parents, I was like, I'm not going to school tomorrow. Like, there's no way I'm going to school tomorrow. Like, absolutely not happening. And it hurt, like, in the way a playoff loss hurts, obviously. But looking back, it just makes it so much worse. Like, knowing how close they were and that they beat this, like, fraud Hall of Famer, or got beat by this fraud Hall of Famer, you know, and, you know, whatnot. I think they probably would have lost to the Packers. They had beaten them early. I don't know if you recall, they'd beaten them earlier that year.
Yep.
Yeah, it was a Thursday night game the week after Thanksgiving, but Brett Favre got hurt in that game, and Aaron Rodgers kind of came in and batted cleanup. And so that feels really chalk. I think the second one is probably the 09 opener, the first game at AT&T Stadium, and Eli signed the, you know, stadium locker room, whatever. Outside of, because I would like to give you a unique answer. You know what I mean? Because those are really obvious. And like if you Google, there'd be like a BuzzFeed top 10, and those would be numbers one and two. They lost at what was Cowboys Stadium at the time in kind of a shootout game in 2012. Yeah. And Dez Bryant had the pinky outside, yeah. You know, out of bounds game. That was such a bad Cowboys team that Tony Romo and Dez Bryant really almost lifted to a playoff berth. I'd put that ahead of the 2011 finale, honestly, because like it was around 2011 where we started to feel like Charlie Brown and we started to feel like Lucy. So it hurts a little bit less when you know you're going to get punched in the face. Like the punch still hurts. Don't get me wrong. But like when you recognize what your life is, it, you know, the shock effect is a little bit less.
The Tony Romo hands fold in like a balloon. In 2011.
Yeah, I mean, there were several of those. That wasn't the most intense one, but that was tough. But then they got payback with the Kevin Ogletree game in the opener the next year on Wednesday night. Yeah.
There have been so many Sunday night football games in the last 5 to 8 years, I would say, where I've gone into the game with no expectation. I think about the one Sunday night game, the first three plays of the game, DeMarcus Lawrence just going past Eric Flowers unblocked because Eric Flowers couldn't get out of his stance fast enough. I think about the one game where he stuck his leg out and just outright tripped DeMarcus Lawrence because he knew he couldn't get in front of him. So it doesn't even out necessarily, but we have gotten our fair share of ass kickings over the last handful of seasons. I mean, we haven't beat Dak since he was a rookie. Weiss and I talk about this all the time. We have been, the Cowboys and the Eagles have taken turns destroying us for the better part of the last decade. And that's our penance. You know, we won our Super Bowls and we're eating it for now. It's rough. It's not great. I mean, even Thursday, like that's maybe the last game the Giants are going to have a decent chance in. And it's purely because Cooper Rush is starting and they're still, you know, 3.5-4 point underdogs and probably not scoring more than 12 points.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could say that, like, I felt bad or anything, but I obviously don't. It's not at that point, like people act like, oh, the franchise is cursed or whatever. It's just an unfortunate run of coincidences. And, you know, I would offer that they probably should have beaten Dak in, if you're talking about those games specifically, in the 2018 finale. Yeah. When the Cowboys had already clinched the division, they had nothing to play for. And Jason Garrett, I would say foolishly, played everybody, but they did wind up winning their wild card game the next week against Seattle. But Dak, that was one of the best throws of Dak Prescott's career. Rolling to his left and finding Cole Beasley in the back of the end zone. So, you know, there's a little bit of like ifs and whatnot that kind of, you know, make these things, you know, funnier than they really are. Like, don't get me wrong. Like I will press on them for content sake, but like, I just to answer, the question that you didn't ask, my favorite win against the Giants, is the Odell catch game. It just brings me so much joy to know that like this moment that if some people do like hoist it up as this amazing moment was a Giants loss. And that the best catch was the one that Dez Bryant made at the end after Tyron Smith just completely stonewalled Jason Pierre-Paul twice on the same play.
Well, Tyron Smith had a history of holding Jason Pierre-Paul and not having it get called.
I also,
Jason Peters, by the way.
I also think that, you know, the Giants did something that I feel like teams don't do enough, not with Jason Pierre-Paul, but Olivier Vernon was like Tyron Smith's kryptonite. And I know that didn't work. That didn't like work out for the Giants, but like that, I was legitimately nervous when the Giants signed him because he was at the time, the only dude in the NFL who could give Tyron Smith fits. And like, you should do that. Like you should find the guys that are really good against the players who you play against twice a year. And you should go get them. And I thought that was really smart from the Giants.
I'm going to ask you one last question. We'll wrap up here with you, RJ. I am planning a trip to Ohio next August.
To watch the fraud get in. Yeah. Okay.
The Canton, Ohio. I don't know if you've ever been there. There's going to be like a type of ceremony there and they're going to induct somebody in the Hall of Fame. And I wanted to see if you wanted to go with me so we can clap together when he gives a speech.
So my take on this, truly and honestly, this isn't the only way I like to evaluate who belongs in the Hall of Fame, but I love the question of, could you tell the story of the NFL without this person? Like that's an important way to, you know, at least filter people, I think, for the Hall of Fame discussion. And you certainly couldn't tell the story of the NFL without Eli Manning, and not because of his last name, but because of the role that he played. Now, I don't mean this in an offensive way, but like by the same measurement, I would argue that Julian Edelman is a Hall of Fame. I know that's a volatile subject in and of itself. At no point in time was Eli ever the best quarterback in his own division. I mean, like that's a subjective way of measuring this. I recognize that, but like that feels like enough of a trump card for me to be like, yeah, I can't put this dude in the Hall of Fame. Like, I recognize he'll get in, and I can square it and make peace with it. But like, at no point was he ever the best quarterback in the NFC.
Can I ask you one question? Or two questions, because it might be a follow up.
Okay.
Number one, if I ask you, what is the main reason why Tony Romo didn't win a Super Bowl? What would you say? And this is not like, I'm not trying to
bag
on Romo. I thought Romo was a good quarterback, definitely a much better quarterback than announcer. But why do you think he didn't get to a Super Bowl or win a Super Bowl?
I think that we say things like he wasn't clutch, he couldn't win the big moment, things like that. I think that they ran into some buzzsaws, and some of that involves some self-induced errors, the bobble in Seattle. Although, I mean, the bobble in Seattle is what it is. And like, I'm not here to make up for Romo for that, whatever, 18 years later, but how many starting quarterbacks in the NFL are doing that? You know, and he was, for anyone who doesn't know, he was the backup quarterback entering that season. And that was before punters overtook that duty primarily. So, I mean, they just never changed when he became the starter. And he was holding for Martin Gramatica, who took over for Mike Vanderjagt because he was released that season. And Martin Gramatica, by the way, hit a game winner at the Meadowlands that year to beat the Giants. So
I remember that.
The bobble is whatever. I mean, they lost to the 07 Giants, who won the Super Bowl. Like, you know, so we sit here and be like, oh, they lost a playoff game. Well, they lost the team to what is literally one of the best teams to ever play. 2 years later, they lost to Brett Favre's Vikings. I mean, who were a machine until they ultimately lost themselves. And then finally, they lost in the playoffs to the Packers, who we, again, acknowledge to be this like amazing team led by Aaron Rodgers, who will be a Hall of Famer himself and arguably should have maybe taken the lead at the end of the game that Aaron Rodgers probably would have overtaken right back like 3 minutes later. I mean, so, you know, there's a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And ultimately, the answer is probably because it's very hard to win a Super Bowl. That's why Tony Romo did.
It is. But do you think the teams were always well equipped enough to compete and get to a certain part of the playoffs?
That was going to be my question. Yeah,
I think the
answer is yes, but I'll let you explain.
I think the 2007 Dallas Cowboys are one of the greatest teams in NFL history to not win the Super Bowl. They had 13 Pro Bowlers on their team. Yeah, I mean, that's at a time when the Pro Bowl was real and, you know, meant something, and you didn't just have to go off of all pro selections. I mean, and with peak prime and these Tony Romo apologists who just hate Dak Prescott because he ruined their lives or whatever. I'm talking about Cowboys fans. They act like, oh, Romo never had the cast that Dak has. Tony Romo had Terrell Owens and Jason Witten on the same team. And that 07 offensive line with Andre Garrard and Leonard Davis and Kyle Kozar, they were amazing. And so to not get it done was really unfortunate. I do think they kind of, you know, outkicked their coverage a little bit in 2014. They were very magical in 2014. It wasn't a good team. Yes, it was peak prime Dez Bryant. Jason Witten was obviously there, and the offensive line was tremendous, but that defense was horrible. I mean, one of their best pass rushers was Jeremy Mincy. George Selvey was the other. I mean, that was the first year that DeMarcus Ware was playing in Denver, so they didn't have him. I mean, Rolando McClain was like one of the best players on that defense, who they brought in after Sean Lee tore his ACL. In 2009, they were pretty talented, but, you know, again, and in 2006, I mean, they were just really surviving. I think more than anything, they were a wild card team that year. And so I would say the only time I really hold him responsible for, you know, crashing the Corvette was 2007.
And my rebuttal to that is the great teams that the Cowboys have assembled, Tony Romo, the difference with Eli Manning is that was almost never the case with Eli Manning. You never looked at any of those Giant teams and you said, ah, that's a great team. Yes. Were they good? Yes. But both of those Super Bowl teams got hot, and they got hot when the quarterback took his game to the next level. And that
would offer that they had two of the most ferocious pass rushers in playoff history, both of those years.
That's all they had.
That's not an all. That's not like all they had was this tiny little thing. Like, that's an amazing thing. They stifled the most perfect team in NFL history because of their tremendous pass rush. They had Steve Spagnuolo, who we now know is this genius.
And even in that, game, they still needed two game-winning drives from their quarterback to win the game.
Look, Eli won two.
I get it.
And
such a ball buster, Weiss.
The regular season wasn't great. No, because I literally have had this debate with people, and that's why I said I have two questions for you, RJ, because I knew he was going to answer that question that way. That, well, they just ran into better teams, and I always tell them, as great as those Dallas teams were, the Giants never had a great team like that around Eli. And that's not a shot at Tony Romo, because I actually think, believe it or not, I think Tony Romo was a great quarterback, underrated quarterback. If he played in any other, if he played for any other team, there would be movies made about his life. I truly believe that. I actually ran into Tony Romo at a Rite Aid in Virginia. He has family that lives in Virginia. I ran into Tony Romo one time.
What I understood from this was that the Super Bowl winning teams from the Giants were horrible teams, and so shouldn't really be regarded among.
They were not great teams. They were not great teams.
So it's good to know that you were the two worst of the 58 Super Bowl winning teams.
And that's why Eli Manning deserves to get in the Hall of Fame, and he will get into the Hall of Fame.
He will get in. We agree with this, but it makes me happy to know that you're going to have, and I think it makes you happy that you're going to have to defend it every step into Kent. I mean,
I'll do it for the.
What else are we going to talk about?
That's sports. Like, it should be that way. Like, and it's so reductive and it's dumb, but it is cool to be like, the guy won two Super Bowls. Like, it, you know what I mean? Like, it's frustrating and it's maddening, and there can be and should be more context, but it's also, you know, badass to be like, yeah, well, he did it and nobody else did. So, you know, whatever.
If Eli Manning played for those Dallas Cowboy teams, I think you get one.
If Eli played for those Dallas Cowboys teams, he would be a much better broadcaster than he is these days.
I think you would get one. Well, the Manning cast is taken off.
Terrible. Right? It's horrible. Nobody watches it. If
Eli Manning played for the Cowboys at any point of his career with those teams, they wouldn't won.
Eli throwing
to Jason Witten and
imagine Eli on the stage that the Cowboys provided. He would be so boring and so vanilla.
He won the first game. He won the first game in AT&T Stadium.
I brought that up.
Is the signature still there on the wall?
It is. Jerry has spoken about that before. He said he likes it. I like it too. Like, it is cool. Like, that should exist. Is the hole that Odell punched in the wall after they lost to the Eagles to give the Cowboys a division title in 2016 still there?
Wait, didn't he punch a wall against Green Bay?
It was against Philly, but I can't remember if it was at the link or...
Yeah, he punched the wall against the Packers in that wild card game in 2016.
Yeah, like four drops. Yeah.
That was the Miami Boat game.
My last question is, like, do you believe in the boat curse? Like, is that a thing?
Yes. And it's not even just the fact that they got on the boat a week before a playoff game. It's the fact that they wore Timberlands on that boat.
And those weren't even Victor Cruz's Timberlands. Those were Odell's second pair. Victor Cruz had to get on the plane with nothing. Odell's like, we'll get you clothes when we get there.
You bring up the boat and that it was before the playoffs. Tony Romo and Jason Witten went to Cabo the week before. I mean, like, if that happened today.
With Jessica Simpson.
Yeah, I know. I mean, if that happened today, if the starting quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys on the bye week in the playoffs went to Cabo, we would never, ever, ever stop talking about it.
Eli Manning would have never done that.
Eli Manning doesn't do anything fun. He just plays golf.
Yeah. He drives a Toyota.
Yeah.
RJ, it's been a lot of fun, man. Happy Thanksgiving. I'm actually rooting for the Cowboys this week because I'm full tankathon. I actually do want the number one pick, and I think there's a good chance the Giants get it. And if they do, we'll see what happens. But RJ, man, thank you very much. Let the listeners know, even though they probably won't go follow you because they're Giant fans and you're a Cowboy guy, but a lot of people hate follow, so where can they find you?
Twitter, Instagram, Threads, at RJ Ochoa. TikTok is RJ.Ochoa. I don't know what the blue sky handle is, but I'm RJ Ochoa there. Like, it's very complicated. There's like a dot blue sky or whatever, if that's your thing. Happy Thanksgiving. Merry Christmas to you both and to your audience. I wish you all health, wealth, and happiness, but pure unadulterated sports misery. And if you're looking for a pro tip from somebody who is very well accustomed to the Thanksgiving Day game, because there is a little like, oh, how do we handle this? Like, you know, what do we do? You want to eat before. Trust me. You want to eat before. And if it's really the same whether you win or lose the game, obviously it's better if you win. But that way, after the game, you can go do your early Black Friday shopping if that's your thing, or you can visit with family and play Monopoly or whatever. And then later, you're hungry enough for leftovers. But if you wait to eat until after the game, you don't get the leftovers till the next day.
There you go. Thanksgiving professional right there, RJ Ochoa. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, guys. You have a good one. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
That was our interview with RJ Ochoa. I think at the end of that interview, I kind of got him to admit that Eli would have won a Super Bowl or two with the Cowboys. Talked about how great those teams were. But Nick, Thanksgiving. I'm a big Thanksgiving guy. I don't know about you. What's your go-to for Thanksgiving?
My favorite side is always going to be mac and cheese, baked mac and cheese. That's great. Mashed potatoes, obviously, Irish poverty. I was meant to be picking potatoes, but here I am doing a podcast. Yeah, I like the sides more than the actual main dishes, like turkey, ham, roast beef, whatever. The sides are better to me.
You know, my family does a lamb. We don't do like
lamb is good. Lamb usually do for Greek Easter, but lamb's good.
Lamb is the best. Yeah, I love turkey though. I'm a big turkey guy. Smoked, baked, fried, whatever.
Smoked turkey's good. Smoked turkey.
I love it. Anyways, Nick, happy Thanksgiving. Viewers, happy Thanksgiving. Ethan, happy Thanksgiving. You're not here, but happy Thanksgiving to you. We will talk again next week. Hope everyone has a safe and happy long weekend. Peace.